Flunkies and Junkies, Happy New Year. Scott Griscola here with the NWA Saturday Special, along, of course, with the Doctor, Dr. G, George Bellino. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to everyone out there. And thank you so much for your support over the last year. Wow, I can't believe this year has come and gone that fast, even though we've had such a crazy time with the pandemic. The year actually kind of flew by, and I think, you know, doing these NWA shows, even though we didn't have our regular NWA power pretty much starting in March, but we kind of kept it going. And it's been a real fun ride. We've had some great shows over the year.
Yes, the Saturday Special, definitely one of the highlights here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network over 2020. The network was a highlight for 2020 because everything else was a low light. But we're actually off this weekend. We're enjoying the first weekend of the new year with our family and friends. So we're going to give you, just like last week, another Saturday Special rewind. This one, we're going to go back to July 11th. If you all remember, the Doctor and I did a four-part series on the NWA's Mount Rushmore. Who would be the four faces of the National Wrestling Alliance? Now, if you remember, Dr. G, three of them were Lock, Stock, and Barrel, no questions asked. Harley Race, Dusty Rhodes, and of course, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. The fourth face, though, you and I were kind of haggling that it's not as cut and dry as the other three faces were.
That's right.
So we decided to have a guest on and haggle possible nominations for the fourth face. So we're going to go back to July 11th of, I guess we can now say, this past year for this weekend's Saturday Special Rewind. But don't fret. Dr. G and I will be back next Saturday, the 9th, for the first original episode of 2021. We got some NWA news, and maybe we'll start talking some GWCW. All your ballots are in. We thank you for your participation throughout the year, and we will start tabulating match votes, and at placetobenation.com, we'll start putting together that composite list. But here at the Saturday Special, maybe we'll start revealing some of the matches that we had on our ballot, Dr. G and I.
Sounds fun.
It is a lot of interesting stuff. We'll even mention the non-NWA, the Nitro era. We'll even throw those matches in too. Anyway, have a great New Year's weekend. We will talk to you guys next Saturday morning with a brand new episode. But let's go back to July 11th of this past year and our discussion on who would be the fourth face of the NWA's Mount Rushmore. Happy New Year.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PTB Wrestling Network, it's Saturday. Well, if you're listening to this the minute it dropped, it is. It could be any day of the week. But welcome to the newest episode of the NWA Saturday Special. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo. We have had a fun week on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. A lot of great shows dropped. Some great shows dropping this weekend. In fact, if you're listening to this the day it drops, there's a new show at 6 o'clock later this afternoon, Eastern time, and one of the guys doing it's on tonight. Let me bring in my co-host, the Doctor, Dr. G, George Bellino, who now, starting this week, will be, is it this week? I don't even remember when I said it would debut, but at some point, he has a new show debuting.
I thought you said the 21st, right?
Oh, did I? Oh, well, whatever.
It's
somewhere, I don't know. We have so many shows in this.
Where's your cracked staff? I thought your cracked staff was on.
My cracked staff? She's around. I'll let her, I'll ask her. It's like Miss Miss Fifi, not Miss Fifi. What was Bobby Heenan's assistant's name? Maybelle, Marianne,
Betty Lou,
Betty Lou, Peggy Sue, something like that. It was Betty Lou. Anyway, Doctor, always a pleasure.
Yep. I'm excited about tonight's show.
You say that every week. I'm going to give you a shirt. One day you're going to say, "I'm mediocre about this week's show." Could you imagine?
That's what I was wondering right now. Should you call the main event called the mid card?
The mid card.
Right now, that's basically what we're watching on TV these days. So
I know. Well,
it's not deserving of the main event.
Yeah. Well, Nate, Steve, and I are doing our best, and the downloads have shown it. Thank you so much for your support on all the shows here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, including this guy's show. Our guest tonight on our topic. He is the tri-host of the Special Relations Pod, which will be dropping its newest episode today. If you're listening on Saturday, if you're listening after Saturday, it's already there. Take a listen. He's a previous guest here in the special, and he's also the tri-host with the doctor on the new show. He's the only guy I know in Place to Be Wrestling Network history that is a tri-host on two tri-host shows. From the other side of the pond, Mr. Callum McDougall. Good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon, sir. I don't even know.
Good morning, good evening. It's like the Truman Show. Good afternoon, good morning, good night, good evening.
Exactly. You say goodbye and I say hello. Callum, always a pleasure. Of course, Callum, a tri-host with our good friends, Mr. Ben Locke and Mr. Rory McNamara on the Special Relations. We'll talk more about that show because, as I mentioned, if you're listening to the episode the day it drops, Saturday the 12th, Mr. McDougall, sir, your gang, my mates, newest episode of the Special Relations drops later today. We'll talk about that later on.
Just so you know, Saturday's the 11th, just so you're not confusing.
Fuck, I always do that. I don't know what's the matter with me with June, with July, June. I don't even know what month it is. Fucking COVID. It's just one long day, one long month, four walls, no bars. Fuck this world. Where's the asteroid when you need it? Anyway.
Come on. Tonight.
Come on, Callum. We need a good pub. We need a goddamn good pub, my brother. A good pub.
There's a new bike open. Thankfully.
I know. Well, here, not quite.
Now, can I tell them, are the bars open out by you?
Yeah, they can open if they've got a beer garden. So as long as you can sit outside and you can keep 2 meters away from everybody, then they'll let you open. But it's table service only.
Do you need to serve food?
No, they don't actually. Oh, wow.
Now here in the States, well, at least in our state in Connecticut, bars cannot open unless they serve food. So
right.
A lot of bars aren't open. I mean, breweries here in Connecticut can open A, if they have outside capabilities, and B, if they have a food truck or they have some of their own food.
We don't need food, but as long as you can be outside within 2 meters and you can provide a table service, that's all they're requiring.
I see. Okay. Well, you guys are getting lucky then. Hopefully, people are responsible. Tonight, guys, we are finally concluding. We took a detour last week. We are going to conclude our four-part series here on the NWA Saturday Special, our here on the show, NWA Mount Rushmore. We did the first three, which were unanimous here, and that is, of course, Handsome Harley Race, the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, and, of course, the Nature Boy Ric Flair. Those three slots were unanimous, indisputable, lock, stock, and barrel. Then we took a week off for the holiday last week and, of course, talked about the Great American Bash. We're back this week, and we are going to haggle about who belongs in that fourth slot. And we've gotten some interesting comments from people, social media. I've talked to people. I guess it depends on your point of view. So let's haggle tonight here on the Saturday special today. Some names that would be important enough to go on.
Well, you know what the tough thing, Scott, with this is that you see even just when in sports, when they do like, you know, top tens or anything like that, it depends on the error, you know, like sometimes, and you may find tonight when we're discussing who we think the fourth person is, we may not go back into the 40s and 50s. We may not pick somebody from that era, where somebody maybe older than us may pick somebody for their Mount Rushmore. So it is tough. I mean, we try to do the best we can and try, you know, like I try to, you know, obviously Harley Race really was not totally our generation. It was kind of like the generation before us. I mean, he did kind of cross over a little bit into our generation.
Right.
So, you know, with the network now, you can go back and see a lot of this stuff. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to pick Luthez, but I didn't really see too much of Luthez. So it's very hard. I mean, obviously, I've heard some great things about him, but there's not a lot out there that you could find on him. I'm sure if you really search on YouTube, you may find stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see at least just from our perspective tonight, like who we would pick for our fourth person to be on the Mount Rushmore. It's it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun. I think between the three of us, I think we're gonna have three different answers.
Well, it's funny, and as this show, I'll post it on Twitter, my Twitter at PTB Podfather, and of course at Place to Be Nation. And we want your input. I'll put the question out there. Who do you all think should be the fourth face on our NWA Mount Rushmore? Maybe you'll have a different person completely than us. And you brought up a name, Dr. Gene. Let's talk about that name. And that name, obviously, is Lou Thesz. Lou Thesz undoubtedly is one of the greatest of all time, period. You know, he only had the belt, I think, four times, but combined, he held the belt for, like, what, 5,000 days or some nonsense. He held the belt for almost 8 years, from 1949 to 1957. Right as television was emerging, he was a star. But does the era hurt him? Because, again, there's not a ton of Lou Thesz to watch. We hear about it in magazine articles and interviews. Lou Thesz came back, you know, in the NWA / WCW in the late 80s, early 90s. He'd show up at shows. He would ref matches occasionally if he could. So he has been seen in the consciousness late 80s, early 90s, before he really got old and ultimately passed away. But did the fact that, regardless of what he did for television and wrestling in the late 40s into the early 60s, does the lack, Callum, of exposure hurt him in people's eyes?
I think it probably will, because you can go on YouTube and Daily Motion and the network and all these places, and you can type in anybody and you'll be able to see some matches. But if you get somebody from Lou Thesz's era, then you hear all the time about even the WWF, old WWF tapes haven't made it, and they've just been destroyed or whatnot, have been taped over.
Right.
So you have that issue with Thesz, but they just didn't, at that time, did they really think that they were going to have a platform to ever see, like, have these matches played again? So a lot of the stuff will just be, but just because of the era, lost to time. So you won't find as much stuff. Like myself, going back, if I put in Lou Thesz into YouTube, there won't be a lot of stuff to watch.
Right.
So yeah, I think he has been hampered a bit by that.
Yeah, there's some stuff like Under the Hidden Gems on the WWE Network that you could find with Lou Thesz. But in all honesty, the really big exposure of Lou Thesz at this point, he wrote a book called Hooker. He's lauded by experts from Stu Sachs to, you know, George Napolitano and Bill Apter and all those guys, throughout all the magazines, The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling, and of course PWI. But I think Callum makes a good point, Doctor, that when you're trying to put together like the top four, the four faces of the NWA, the fact that 95% of those currently watching wrestling or are alive right now probably did not see Lou Thesz until he showed up randomly on some show in like 1988, 89, 90 or something. Does he deserve to get hampered by that? Does he deserve to get ripped?
First of all, you have to put him into consideration. But the thing is with Lou Thesz, what's funny about the NWA, if you remember watching when we were younger, much younger, when, you know, in the mid 80s, when they talked about the past NWA champions, you always heard about, obviously, Harley Race, Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., Terry Funk. But you didn't really, occasionally, you know, you'd hear like a Gordon Soley or somebody mention like a Lou Thesz, but you didn't hear it like you would hear those names. So, you know, it's very hard. I mean, but you have to put them into consideration. I'm going to tell you right now, Lou Thesz is not my fourth guy, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve to be there. Again, when you do these, again, there's only four names you can come up with. And when you do any of these kind of things, there's always debates about it. You know, it happens in the mainstream sports too. You know, people, there's always those arguments of who's, you know, who's the best, the top five baseball players or the top five football, you know, everybody's going to have their different versions, and also depending on their age group. But I definitely think you got to consider Luthez. Luthez definitely, you know, like I said, if you had, if we had 10 slots to pick, of course Luthez would be there. No doubt about it. But
right.
But he's not my fourth. You're probably going to be a little surprised by my fourth, but
okay.
You know, we'll get to that obviously when we get there. But yeah, I think Luthez definitely has to be considered. I mean, I'm assuming for you guys, Luthez is not on
no.
your.
No, I don't have Luthez. I don't have Luthez on my fourth spot. Callum, no. I don't think you do, right?
No. Okay, so
not for myself.
No. Okay.
But we did. I mean, I know that our other co-host for our new show, the NWA Crock and Roll.
We have a ton of actually great submissions for those that couldn't make the show tonight, but they had their own submissions. One of them is indeed your our man from Sean Kidd from the new show, who is tri-hosting the brand new show NWA Crock and Roll, which will debut in a couple weeks here on the network. He wanted to put his fourth spot in, and this is a good one because this is another representing of a group, and like Luthez would represent the old school of NWA. This guy would probably go down as arguably the greatest mid-card guy in NWA history. Sean Kidd's choice for the fourth slot is the enforcer himself, AA, Arn Anderson. Arn is probably one of the two or three greatest wrestlers in NWA history, mid-card guys. He's probably up there as maybe one of the five greatest wrestlers that never won a world championship. Maybe as a representative of everyone else, because we obviously have three main event guys on our Mount Rushmore, you know, Harley, Dusty, and Rick. Arn may be up there as like the face that represents everybody else. Mid card, lower mid card, that kind of thing. You know, curtain jerkers, that kind of thing. Tag team guys. What do you think, Callum? Does Arn? Let me ask you this: Does Arn deserve the spot? And what holds him back, if not?
That's a difficult one. Arn, as you say, he's one of the best all time. You can put him in any position, and he'll thrive, and he'll be. He'll not look out of place. Open the car, tag team, put him in a main event. He can do everything. The only thing is that can he do? It might be strange to say. It might sound strange to say, but can he do too much? Is he not? Is he like a jack of all trades? A master of most, but he's not got that one thing like a Ric Flair or a Dusty Rhodes that's holding him back. I think it might be that as good as Arn is it just that there's people that are better at, like, I don't know if this is going to sound really bad, but he's excellent, but he's not as good as anyone else in contention, if that makes sense.
No, I think that makes perfect sense, because again, Arn, one of the greatest mid-card guys ever, he never won the US title. He is what many consider the face of the world television title, and arguably maybe like Billy Gunn, only better, one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time. But I'll ask you the same question, Dr. G. What does Arn have a valid slot for that fourth position, and what would hold him back?
Let me tell you something about Arn. As I've gotten older and because of the network and we're able to watch different things, you know, we kind of took him for granted when we were watching at the time. Come on, if we had this discussion when we were in the 80s, we probably wouldn't have even put him there, although wrestling was different and we thought about wrestling differently then. You know, we believed in the kayfabe probably a little bit when we were younger. So, but when it comes to Arn Anderson, you really watch his stuff. He is really good. He's really good on the stick, and he's just a good, solid, I mean, you could put him in the ring with anybody. I mean, they did when they put him in the ring with Renegade, which he always says is like, you know, he always, that's like one of his worst times having to deal with that. But even try to get a match out of him, he could do it. as crappy as it was, but it's not his fault. But, you know, he's just – the thing about Arn is he kind of – he's one of those guys you kind of take for granted. Even in the Four Horsemen, you take him for granted. But I tell you the truth, in the ring, he's just as good as Ric Flair. Now, is he all around that character better than Ric Flair? No. No, Ric Flair obviously had the total package there. Nice pick by Sean Kidd. I mean, it wouldn't have been my fourth. I mean, I love Arn. Don't get me wrong. I love Arn. I would definitely put him and Tully as one of the top tag teams of all time in the NWA. But no, I think he just falls a little short for me. And let's not forget with this Mount Rushmore, the four guys do not have to be wrestlers.
Well, we're going to get into that.
That's influential. Right. So the thing is, but in regards to Arn, you're asking me about Arn. I just think he falls a little short on being on that Mount Rushmore. Listen, I love Arn. I think he's great. I love listening to his podcast because he really gives an insight, and he's very dry and he's very funny. And you just realize that he's a humble guy that really just loved the business. He loved the wrestling business, and it showed in his matches, the way he spoke on the mic, and the way he feels about it even today, and the way what he does and the coaching he does. I mean, John Cena in the WWE wanted – Arn was his personal agent. So that says a lot right there. So he falls a little short, but I think that's a nice pick.
Arn Anderson's the guy that if you want somebody to – if somebody's coming along and you want to make them on the Mount Rushmore, like a John Cena, you put them with Arn Anderson and he'll make them look, he won't even make them look like $1 million, he'll make them look like $1 billion.
I agree. I think Cody picked him to be in AEW with him because he knows what Arn could do. And Arn, even though it's on TV, he's the coach, but I think behind the scenes, I think Arn really works with Cody and works with a lot of the guys at AEW. And I think that was a great hire by them because this is a guy that will adapt, even though he's old school. He realizes he has to adapt with the times, and he will, but he'll also instill some of that old school mentality and psychology to some of these young guys today, which I think it could only be helpful for anyone that comes in contact with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, a lot of people, when they see that World Television Championship belt, they think of AA. So that's a choice. Nate Milton, the Godfather, my tri-host on Place to Be Nation's main event, he had wanted to put a nomination in. And this guy, you clearly cannot ignore. He was a displant from Mid-South, but he clearly took the reins as one of the top baby faces in the business when Dusty's career kind of wound down in-ring and carried them into the next decade. Of course, I'm talking about Sting. Sting is one of the, and he's arguably one of the most loyal guys in the history of the business. I mean, he stayed with WCW till literally the very end, and then he went to TNA and stayed with TNA until they just didn't want him anymore. And then finally, in 2004, at the end of 2014, he came to the WWE, and of course, he was pretty much retired by then. It was one shot.
That's an interesting choice. I have to be honest with you. I think of him more WCW than I do NWA. Again, a guy that you cannot doubt, just because the NWA kind of wound down in the late 80s, early 90s when they broke apart from WCW. But again, another guy, like you mentioned, the loyalty. Probably the guy that's probably even more loyal than him in the business is Undertaker.
Yep. Well, yeah, they're like peas in a pod. They're really the faces. Vince... And just on a side note, Vince and Bischoff, many consider the faces of the Monday Night War. I consider Sting and Taker the faces of the Monday Night War because they were the most loyal. But yeah, anyway, yeah, you're right.
Continue. Well, I think, you know, somebody, it was funny, somebody on Arn's podcast the other day asked them, you know, what would you do? What guy do you think would was more loyal, like, or what guy do you think would leave for their respective company, Sting or Undertaker? You know, like, who would be the one that would have jumped first if given the opportunity? And it was very hard for Arn, but he did say Sting if WWE, you know, was going to do right by his character and everything like that, he probably would have taken the money and went over to WWE. But he goes, because if you think about it, Sting didn't have, you know, the one constant in the WWE is Vince.
Correct.
Sting didn't have a relationship totally. I mean, maybe a little bit with Bischoff, but there was so many guys in and out that was in charge of WCW, and he still stayed loyal. So yeah, I guess you kind of got to give him credit for staying loyal, because he wasn't really loyal to a person, whereas, you know, Undertaker was very loyal towards Vince.
Correct.
So you have to give, so, you know, a little, maybe a little edge to Undertaker, but I mean, not by much. But I think Sting's a good choice. Nate, you know, definitely Sting, definitely in the late 80s was the becoming the new face, you know, as, like you said, Dusty was winding down. I don't think Nikita was going to reach that level that they wanted him to.
Right.
And Sting had that charisma and the build, and just had the look and everything. And, you know, and Flair helped make him in the ring. And they'll, you know, Sting will tell you that to this day. So not a bad choice. Not a bad choice, but not my fourth, but not a bad choice.
What do you think of that? What do you think of Sting? What's your thoughts on Sting, Callum?
I think it's a good choice as well. Before I came on, I did a bit of research on Mount Rushmore, and because I from being a Brit, I don't really know much about it other than it's four guys' faces. So I found out tonight that they were chosen because it represents different parts of the start of the US, and so Sting would be that sort of, he's like the next generation after your guys like Flair and Dusty. So he would represent sort of the new era going forward.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing would be, if you want to be very pedantic about it, is that he didn't spend a lot of time in under the NWA banner. If you want to be very black and white about it, that he was there and he became a big star when it was WCW as opposed to the NWA, but still a fantastic show, because the guy is a legend.
Yeah, I know, I agree, but I think the one thing that maybe keeps him off, and I think G hit the nail on the head, he was a couple of years within the quote NWA, but by the time Sting really hit his peak, we were technically into WCW, so I think that may hold him back. If we're talking about just under the banner of the National Wrestling Alliance, Sting might have been a little too late on that timeline. But he's definitely is in the discussion. He's definitely in the discussion. I'm going to bring up a guy right now that might get me laughed at, except Drew Wardlaw. What about Lex Luger? Hmm. I mean, He's
criticized so much. I mean, most.
Well, he is.
Europe, he gets crap all the time.
Yep, he does.
And I like Lex, to be honest. He was Lexi, one of Lexi. Favorites.
Yeah, he. But he's been, other than the couple, you know, the, I guess you could say, 3 years he was in WBF/WWF from 92 to late 95 when he was on the first Nitro. But he was in the Horsemen. He was in a big mega feud with Flair in 88. He was world champion, helped put Sting over. But again, is he more a WCW guy than an NWA guy, Callum?
I would say so. I think the only thing that Lex Luger is, people will always remember Lex Luger for his 91 to about 95, because mm-hmm. he had, but if you look at it, he was put in a horrific situation where Flair was kicked out or left, and he was given the ball at that point. He never got the big handover that he deserved.
Right.
He So at that point, he just lost interest. He wasn't particularly interested after the 93 and the Yoko, or not getting the belt at WrestleMania 10. He's always remembered about that. But see, when Lex Luger wanted, I was motivated and wanted to be good, he could be great. I've seen Lex Luger matches against Brian Pillman and from Clash of the Champions 9. It's superb. The guy could be really, really good when he wanted to be. But I do think he's more of a WCW guy. Unfortunately for him, because it is a very good choice.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Dr. G? I know you're a big Luger guy, but what keeps him? What puts him in, and what keeps him out?
Well, he did start. You know, he started like in Florida. I want to say like 1986, somewhere around there. So that was NWA. So I guess he had probably a good 3-4 years NWA. I think he was still coming into his own then in the NWA banner, so I think that might keep him out. I think he's more WCW. But one thing I think Callum's totally right about Lex. When Lex is motivated, now think about Lex now. People that meet him now, they think he was the greatest person on earth. Like, I mean, people say he's like the nicest man you could ever meet now. You know, obviously he's been humbled. He went through a lot of crap to get to that point. But if he had that mindset that he has now, if he had it back then, even though he may have had limitations, he could have been probably one of the best wrestlers in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember, this is a guy that didn't grow up a wrestling fan. He, you know, didn't really know the sport very well. He was very, very green when he came in. He did train with Hiro Matsuda, you know, kind of got a little bit of a cocky attitude as things went on, you know, very, very into his body and how he looked. But when you're absolutely right. And Ric Flair has said it too on interviews. When Lex was, you know, when Lex's head was in the game, you could get a good match out of him. You know, he wasn't that bad. You know, he had his power moves. He was going to do his thing, but he wasn't that bad. But he just could not keep. And you think about that run that the WWF gave him. Now, maybe it was a time when the business was down. But if he really, truly had his heart and his head into it, and if he was the guy that he is now back then, that he could have been maybe the next, you know, Hogan or right underneath it. I know people are going to be sitting here laughing as they're saying they're living that, but it does come with a mindset. You have to have the right mindset, because he had the skills. That was not the problem. I mean, he had the body. He had the look. Maybe he needed to work on some of the skills. But listen, Hulk Hogan wasn't the best wrestler that was out there, but he had that charisma and he had that, you know, had the look. Right. Lex Luger, you listen to him in an interview now, you're like, is this the same guy? He had that mindset back then. Wow, it could have been. We could be talking about you could be talking about him being the fourth man on Mount Rushmore, maybe even the fourth man on a wrestling Mount Rushmore. Just again, just did not have his heart into it. Same thing for Ultimate Warrior, another guy that could have been one of the greatest of all time if he just had the right mindset and he had the right attitude. You know, so it does become a full package. When, you know, for these guys who are going to be on the Mount Rushmore, it's not just they have one thing or the other. You have to have the total, with lack of a better word, saying the total package.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting one. So did somebody give you that choice? Or
nope, I just brought that up. No, that just came out of my head. Although one of my fellow gems on Jenny and the Gems, Drew Wardlaw, is a big Luger guy. So that one's for him.
If Drew ever comes on the show, I'd love to talk to him about Luger, because I wonder if he would agree with me if he had that same mindset that he has. I mean, Callum, what do you think? I mean, if Luger, I don't know if you've heard interviews with him or read interviews with him, how he is now. If he had that same mindset back then, that he could have been much better.
Yeah, I would say so, because he's now working for, is he now not back working for the WWE as like an ambassador or like an advisor to some of these young guys?
Right.
Because of, obviously he's been through some issues and he's sort of working. So his teams have turned everything around, which is good. But I think so. Yeah, if he had been looking at how good he was, if he had that mindset the whole time, then no doubt he could have been you could be talking about an all time Mount Rushmore as opposed to just the NWA.
Right. I mean, and think about it even too. Another guy that's kind of similar to him is, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, Sid Vicious, whatever name you want to go by. There's another guy that if he was truly 100% committed to the business, had that kind of mindset. Again, the guy had the look. The guy, when you put him in with the right guy in the ring, he could put on a pretty good match. And he was intimidating. The look, the feel, when he walked into the arena, people, you had that awe, like, oh my gosh, look at this guy, how big he is. He didn't have the right mindset, and he could have been one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, it's the old day. Everyone makes fun of it, but if he had as much passion for wrestling as he did for softball, then the guy could have been great.
It's true.
There are some other names you could float out there. What about this name? Because literally from the late, except for a couple of years in the WWF here and there between 1977 and 1991, this guy was a mainstay in the NWA and in Jim Crockett. And we already talked about mid-card guys. This guy was a great mid-card guy and a great main event guy. Ricky Steamboat. We're talking about mid-card guys, and he was in U.S. feuds, TV feuds, just feuds with greatness, and then, of course, every time him and Ric Flair stared at each other, their glares were 4 stars. Then when they actually wrestled, forget it. It could have been at the Yokohama Mama Dome for 95 stars, as Bruce Pritchard would say. The fact remains is, arguably, move for move, Ricky Steamboat might be the greatest wrestler in the history of the business. What do you think about that, Callum? What do you think about him?
I think that's a great choice. I've not seen a lot of NWA Ricky Steamboat from week to week, but you've got Starrcade 83, the tag match is really good.
Yes, it
obviously
is.
you've got the trilogy in 89 with Ric Flair. That goes without saying that those are some of the best matches ever. So if you're looking at it from that standpoint, and he can, as we know, he can do it without, he can put on a great match without even trying. You'll be hard pushed to find a guy who's as you say better move for move, pound for pound than Ricky Steamboat.
What do you think of Steamboat? A pick there, G?
Yeah, you know what? He was on my list. That's not a bad choice at all. Because one thing about Ricky Steamboat is he was a true babyface. I mean, there was no doubt about it. Probably one of the greatest babyfaces of all time. I know that there was a time he wanted to try being a heel, but I just don't think anybody saw it, and I don't think people would have believed it. He just was a true babyface. Probably, not the best stick man. It wasn't great on the stick, but he had everything else. I mean, he came, his name was announced. That crowd, they knew they were in for a great match, and that crowd was all behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, he could be right on that Mount Rushmore because, when you're a heel, like a Ric Flair, who's on there, you need a good baby face.
Yep.
And, Flair had some great matches with not, Ricky, Dusty. I mean, but those Ricky Ric Flair matches, some of the best of all time.
There's going to be at least four, no doubt, four on my GWCW ballot. All three in 89. There's probably be more. All three in 89. I'm going to put the Boogie Jam 84 match, now that I've watched it, and probably one of the matches they had in 94.
And I know, you know, like, I know even, you know, young Steve Austin and Ricky Steamboat had some good matches.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did in 94 for the U.S. title. Yes, they did.
I can't argue with that one. If somebody put a gun to my head and said, we're putting Ricky Steamboat and that's, you have to accept that, I'd be like, I can't argue with that.
Now, you had said earlier, Doctor, that you know, that fourth spot could not be just for wrestlers. Would you put Jim Crockett Jr.? Although a lot of people think it's because of him that they had to sell to Ted Turner. So I don't know. That's six of one, a half dozen of the other.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely could be in consideration. I mean, let's put it this way. Mine's not going to be a wrestler. I'll give you that hint. How about that? Because I don't know when we're going to be announcing or when we're going to go around the round table here. But so
how about Bob Caudle?
Bob Caudle's another good one.
I mean, he was pretty much a lock, stock, and barrel Mid-Atlantic announcer for like 10 years.
Again,
he was the face of the week.
First of all, I agree with Tony Schiavone on this. He should be in the WWE.
Tony.
Hall of Fame.
Jennifer Smith has Tony. I think that's on her Mount Rushmore.
I think that Bob Caudle should be in the WWE Hall of Fame because he is one of the best. But that's a good one. That's a good one. Another one you can't argue. So I think, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm definitely dying to see who you and Callum pick. That's for sure.
What do you think of Tony, Callum?
I love Tony Schiavone. I think he's shown now that he's got. You're listening to the first episode of his podcast, and it was almost heartbreaking listening to him, thinking people didn't care about him, because I've always thought fondly of Tony Schiavone, and now that it's good to see that he's back and he's just as good as ever. He's as good now in 2020 as he was in 1990 or 1985 when he's commentating. He's excellent.
I think it's hilarious, and I said this to Dr. G earlier in the week when we were watching last week's episode of Dynamite Fighter Fest. I said, it's amazing how the two voices of the Attitude Era, Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, or the voices, I should not the Attitude, I'm sorry, the voices of the Monday Night War, Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone are both the voices of AEW. I think that's fucking hilarious.
It is pretty funny, and I have to say, you could tell that those two genuinely are friends and they like each other, because they work very well together. And I think everybody has thought that maybe JR's broadcasting is not the same as it was. And obviously, you know, as people get older, it's different. It's a different game. But I think bringing Schiavone in with JR has actually brought JR's game up, because I think JR.
I wouldn't argue that. There are some episodes of JR's pretty awful, but Tony definitely like helps him along, and I think they both help Excalibur. But
definitely, yeah, I think Excalibur kind of gets lost sometimes, but there's nothing like hearing, you know, JR and Tony when they're at their best.
Mm-hmm. There's other names you could throw out there. Now, when we talk about NWA, we're talking about pretty much till 1989. So,
right, and you got territories that make up the NWA. So that's
exactly,
that's another thing.
You could talk about territory heads: Jim Barnett, Eddie Graham, your boy Eddie Graham, Bill Watts. Although some people probably would argue that one.
Fritz von Erich.
Fritz, yeah. I got to say, guys, I'm really torn on the fourth slot. I really like Sean Kidd's Arn. Here's an interesting one, because we're forgetting, because tag teams are a big part of it. You could split the face in half. You could have half Ricky, half Robert, half Hawk, half Animal, half Ivan, half Nikita, half Ole, half Arn. I don't know, half Bobby, half Dennis, or in Dr. G's case, half Bobby, half Sweet Stan. I don't know. That's a tough one. We're going to do a tag team episode down the line. So don't worry about if you think we're dissing tag teams. We will be doing a tag team episode of the Saturday special down the road. So don't worry about that.
If you want to include tag teams, then you could. If you want to represent tag teams, you could have Jerry Briscoe, because he could be on there as a single or a tag.
That is tremendous. I love that pick, Gerald Briscoe. Yes. Jack Briscoe, because he was not only was he NWA champion. What about one of the Funks, Dory or Terry, Dr. G?
Listen, if you picked one of those two guys, I mean, again, arguably you could put them there.
Dory was champion for 4 years, world champion for 4 years. Terry was champion for a couple. Terry would come in and out of Mid-Atlantic. Dory was in Mid-Atlantic for a good hunk of the 80s. Terry would go in and out. He had that spurt, that 2 year spurt in the WWF, and then he came back in the late 80s. And of course, him and Flair had that fucking amazing feud in 89 post Ricky Steamboat. Dr. G, we will be doing a Four Horsemen episode. Was your fourth guy said yet? Have we said him yet?
No, but I could say it.
Let's
do it.
Let's go around the horn. Dr. G, who is your fourth face of
my
the
fourth UAP face, and it's somebody, and you'll know because Joe Galli said it on the NWA. What's the show, the YouTube show that they do
inside the NWA?
Inside the NWA.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is going to be Gordon Solie. And the reason why I say Gordon Solie is because what people don't realize is, okay, I know him from Championship Wrestling from Florida, but think about it. He was the voice of the, Georgia show, which was the first show. You know, everybody thinks, oh, Vince McMahon. But think about it. NWA or Georgia Championship Wrestling was the first to be broadcast around the country. You know, TBS was a superstation. And, you know, very high ratings. And he was the voice of that show. Not only was the voice of that, he was the voice of Championship Wrestling from Florida. He was also the voice of Continental Wrestling, Championship Wrestling. Then he had, you know, some little stint in the, NWA, WCW when, you know, Crockett bought. And then when Ted Turner bought the company.
Mm.
He was like, if you ask Tony Schiavone or you ask JR, you ask, you know, all the great announcers that we all love, they're going to say Gordon Solie was like their idol or, you know, was one of the best, if not the best wrestling announcer. Now, you listen to him today, maybe he's a different style than what we're used to. But if you really watch him in the context of the wrestling of that day, he really fit the bill. And he's the voice of my childhood growing up watching wrestling. And, you know, he was the straight guy. But, you know, when he got a little upset, you could hear it in his voice. And, you know, he kind of like a Lance Russell. Like I know a lot of guys that watch, you know, the Tennessee promotion. You know, everybody loves Lance Russell. Lance Russell's their guy. You know, Gordon Solie was my guy. But I think Gordon Solie was very instrumental in the NWA because he was kind of the voice of the NWA. I mean, he was the voice of pretty much three big promotions within the conglomerate, which made up the NWA. And if you really go back and you watch the network and you listen to Gordon Solie, it's just, there's something about that smooth voice and just, I don't know. I love it. I think it's great. And like I said, if you ask most of the big announcers like a JR or a Tony Schiavone or, you know, anyone like that, they're going to say Gordon Solie is the dean of all wrestling announcers. So he is my fourth guy. I know that might have shocked you a little bit, but
it did. It didn't.
But I think he really was the voice of the NWA. I would say from the 70s, maybe mid to late 70s until the mid to late 80s.
What are your thoughts on that pick, Callum?
I can't argue with it. I admittedly, and don't. I might be risking any future appearances. Gordon Solie doesn't do it for me. He's not quite my type of announcer, but that's probably just because of sort of I've come up with JR shouting at me, and then Michael Cole, you know, for better or for worse, and Tony. So they're more straight laced. Gordon Solie doesn't tend to do it for me, but I can't argue with if you've got guys like JR and Tony and saying that he's the best ever. You can't argue that the guy's obviously great at what he did. Mm. So no, that's I do think, and Gordon Solie did. If you're looking at it, he was the announcer for three of the biggest territories in the NWA. So you can't argue with his influence on it, because he's the guy telling you. If you're watching, he's the guy telling you and getting across that why these guys are good or why these guys are devious. So you can't argue that he's had a major influence on the NWA.
Mm. And I agree with you, Callum, and the fact that he's not for everyone. You know, especially because we're used to a different type of announcing today than it was back then. So I do get it. I probably don't. I'm remembering a lot with my heart here of how I felt when I was watching wrestling at that time. He probably wouldn't maybe do it for me in these days, just because the way broadcasting's changed. But just because of what he brought to the table and what he was a part of when the NWA really exploded, because to me, the NWA really exploded in the mid to late 70s up until, you know, the mid 80s. And I think he was a big part of that and a big part of, like you said, three big territories that made up the conglomerate, which was the NWA. And yeah. And he was there, you know, he was announcer for some big matches, especially a lot of Dusty Rhodes, who again is on that Mount Rushmore. So
Callum. So Dr. G has Gordon Solie. Callum, who is your fourth face?
I went back and forward on a few guys. I was going to, for the longest time, it was actually going to be Sam Muchnick. Because I've read, I don't know if either of you have read, is it Tim Hornbaker, his book on the NWA, the history of the NWA. If it wasn't for Sam Muchnick, the NWA wouldn't have got out the 50s.
Good point.
But I have chosen as my fourth face is Terry Funk. Because you've got...
Interesting, okay.
He was obviously the champion in the 70s. And then he's gone round the territories. He then come back for the epic matches with Flair in 89. Mm-hmm. But then he's one of the guys that went in. So he was still there for like ECW when you were going in the mid-90s. And he really helped NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling right at the very start. So he's had an influence in three different decades, in different ways, and he's evolved with the time, so he could help. He could be the traveling NWA champion, but then could help the hardcore style of ECW, and then onwards. So I think he's evolved with the times. He's had these his finger in the pie at different times. I think he's moved as the NWA's moved.
Good
choice.
What
do you think of that one, Dr. J?
I know we were talking about it a little bit before. You can't really argue with Terry or Dory Funk, but Terry especially, because Terry's one of those guys. He kind of goes by the beat of his own drum, but when he comes to a territory, he's going to bring it. And he's had some great feuds over the years. You know, everybody thinks of even with Jerry Lawler, you know, Ric Flair. I mean, 89, that has to be one of his best years ever in the business.
and then what he did for NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling, which eventually became ECW. So the guy really transcended many decades, and he was a big part of the NWA itself and the many territories that made up the NWA. He pretty much traveled around to all the territories, even when he was an NWA champion. Can't argue with it. I mean, we all have our opinions of who we like, but hey, Terry Funk, I mean, he deserves to be up there just as much as anybody else that we've mentioned.
That's a good one. I like Funk. I am going to go, my fourth face. I'm going to go a little more towards Dr. G's way of thinking than in terms of a face, just like a voice. And I got to put Tony on that list. Tony Schiavone clearly was the guy that people like me who didn't live in the hotbed of the NWA, Mid-Atlantic, Georgia, Florida, Carolina, the Carolinas, as Flair would say.
So you're part of Slapdick Nation then?
Huh?
You're part of Slapdick.
Yeah, Slapdick Nation. Yeah, exactly.
That's what he calls it. That's what he calls everybody. So you don't listen to his podcast.
I don't, actually. Oh, I have listened to a couple. But anyway. Tony is the voice for people like me who didn't live in the hotbed. And I mean, Tony, I remember being stunned when I first saw Tony on WWF programming in 1989. I was stunned. It was very unnerving. He did make the MSG house shows better, though, in mid to late 90. But, yeah. So we all have Harley Race, Dusty Rhodes, and Ric Flair. G has Gordon Solie. Callum has Terry Funk. Sean has Arn Anderson. Nate has Sting. And I have Tony Schiavone. I got to tell Dr. G, Callum would get this completely because he's in our chats, but I have to give Jennifer Smith's Mount Rushmore because G will laugh your ass off. Her Mount Rushmore would probably be, and I'm totally guessing, but I'm probably right, Arn Anderson, Tony Schiavone, because she loves Tony, Dusty Rhodes, and you ready, G? Kevin Sullivan. She loves Kevin Sullivan.
Well, let me tell you something. Tell you guys, Callum, I grew up watching Championship Wrestling from Florida, and Kevin Sullivan, that creepy bastard, oh my God. When he was doing his Prince of Darkness thing and stuff, I was whatever, 8, 9 years old, he had me scared. I remember even being scared going up, like, to go upstairs to, like, take a shower. I'd be, like, looking around. He creeped the shit out of me when I was younger. He was so into that stuff that, I mean, he's a great heel. I mean, do I think he deserves to be on the Mount Rushmore? No, but is he one of the top wrestlers of the NWA? You know, like if you did a, you know, say top 10 or top 15? Yes, definitely, because he was just a great heel. But, wow, yeah, that's Kevin Sullivan. He gives me chills up my spine. It's so weird listening to him in interviews now and him being, like, totally normal and not doing his whole gimmick. It's like it's creepy to me.
Anyway, that's hers. I gotta ping that to her. I bet you she'd probably be pretty impressed. If there was a fifth head, it would be sensational. It would be Sister Sherry, but that's more WCW. Anyway, or Blacktop Bully, because the King of the Road match is her favorite WCW match of all time. Probably number one on her GWCW list. Probably number one on her GWCW ballot. Anyway,
that would be scary.
Great episode. I'm glad we had this great chance to do the four-part series. Callum McDougal, man, you are awesome. Not exactly, the morning, afternoon, or evening for you. So I thank you for your indulgence. As mentioned, later today, if you're listening to our show right as it dropped on the network, later today, the 12th of – no, it is the 11th. No, I was right.
11th.
Saturday is the 11th. I was right.
No, you said the 12th.
No, I said the 11th.
Go back and listen to the tape.
Let me tell you something. I'm like Jesse. I hear what I hear, and I said the 11th.
Yeah, well,
you're fired, as Bobby Heenan would say. You're fired. I got to get my doctor, Beverly. What was his attorney's name? Beverly Wilshire or whatever the fuck his name was. Anyway, Callum, tell us a little bit about what you the other two mates, Mr. Locke and Mr. McNamara, are going to be doing on this week's Special Relations.
Well, as it always seems to be, we've had an inordinate amount of special episodes, and we've been going for less than a year, but this one is another special episode, because there's a significant event coming up that I won't spoil. Mm-hmm. Coming up for one of us, so it's all themed around that. We visit Rory's happy place, so he goes through his favourite albums, his favourite TV shows. If he was allowed, if he was to be on a desert island for a week, or for a weekend. Funny thing was, I was thinking when we first did it, we recorded it pre the UK lockdown, and Ben was describing it as if you were told you couldn't leave the house for a weekend, and then it would get released after we locked down, and we literally couldn't leave the house. So he'll go through all that, and we do a live watch of one of his favourite matches of all time. So it's going to be a good one. So we discuss it's all themed about a significant life event. Not to spoil anything if you're listening before. If you listen to this before you listen to the Special Relations, but that'll be in your feed later on today, depending on when you're listening to it.
Exactly. And if you're listening after Saturday, it's already there. And if you think that every episode of the Special Relations pod has been great, wait till you get to August, because that'll arguably be the best of them all.
I hear August we're planning August to be an excellent one. Yeah, I think you're probably right there.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. And of course, you can catch these two guys along with Sean Kidd starting in a couple weeks when we debut a brand new show here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, NWA Crock and Roll, where these guys will
the
be going through
right now. It's the greatest.
It's palpable.
It's one of the best podcasts you'll ever listen to. I'm telling palpable. You right now.
That's what it is. Palpable. And it'll debut in a couple weeks here on the feed. And these guys will be doing the Saturday night show from starting in April of 85 through the end of 88. So it'll be a finite show, but trust me, it won't end for a while. There'll be plenty of episodes. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to it, as are these guys. Next week, here on the NWA Saturday Special, we're going to have something with someone. That's all I'm going to say. Time to keep you in suspense. A guest is already lined up. The topic is already chosen. You'll have to wait 7 days to figure out what it is. It's going to be a great... Let's put it this way. One of the guys we're going to talk about heavily, we talked about tonight. We'll just leave it at that. Callum McDougal, you are the greatest, along with my other two mates. Keep things going on the other side of the pond. Have a great week. I'm Scott. He's the doctor. He's not Lex Luger. Neither am I. And you're not either.
Ciao.